This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick the Week podcast, episode 395, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Hey there, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 395. My name is Paul Montgomery. Joining me, Mr. Josh Flanagan.
Hey.
And live from San Diego, Connor Kilpatrick.
I'm going to need everyone to talk much quieter.
Okay.
Last night was the iFanboy party.
Had kind of a night there.
Yeah. Everyone just stay calm.
You can tell that I'm not there by the strong and voice I still have.
Away.
Yeah.
Robust.
Normally at this point, there's a lot of this going on, but nope, I'm not upset about it at all.
I decided not to make the walk this year. Just kicking it home, watching some Murder, She Wrote. At iFanboy.com, we like comics, and we read comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and then one of us picks the best book and writes about it on this here website. Then we talk about it on the podcast, along with various other topics of interest. Before we get to the show, a quick reminder / warning, this is a review show, and we will be talking about the things that happened in this week's books. So if you're worried about that, deal with it. This week, Joshua had the pick.
I did. And you know what? It was not a tough call. Even though here I forgot to leave off the three. It was Deadpool number 13, the pick of the week. And this was the second sort of flashback issue.
Throwback issue.
Yeah. Throwback's probably a much better term, actually. Number 7 was the previous one where things just looked a little different. There's been a regular sort of ongoing Deadpool. I can't believe I'm talking about this. I'm just sitting here talking like everything's normal. It's not normal.
Like you're not praising a Deadpool book for a second time?
Not only that, but it's I'm talking about Deadpool in a regular sense. Like, we all know what's been going on with Deadpool, and this is honestly the first time in history I can say that.
Was it the other throwback issue that you picked, or was it?
No, first issue.
It was the first issue. Okay,
first issue. Right. Tony Moore, Dead Presidents, good times
all
around.
Okay.
So the other flashback issue was good. I don't think I had the pick that week. I don't think it was picked. Whatever. This one brings us back to New York, 1977. Jerry Duggan and Brian Bosain, the co-writers, normal co-writers, and then Scott Koblish came along as the artist on this one.
There's nothing normal about that. No.
And the whole issue is done in not just 70s Marvel style, but with the sort of veneer over it of having the comic been around since the 70s.
Except for the AR recap.
Yeah, that does sort of stick out. I'll give you that. I think out of like aesthetic purposes, I was like, I wouldn't check that. I've never done it, but either way, there's dip of tone everywhere. The colors are coming out of the lines they're supposed to be in. It's just a little messy. It looks like it was printed a little worse. Awkwardly, they probably spent a lot more time making this look bad than they would have if they just printed it the same way they used to. But Val Staples as colorist and Joe Sabino as letterer both really stepped up to make it look really, really wonderful. And at the same time, Koblish, I think, really outdid himself in terms of just the way that the pages look, the not just the style of the drawing, but the layouts of the pages, the sort of over-exaggerated poses. There's a lot going on in these panels, and it reminds me of comics from when I was a kid. And you know, we've seen Koblish do – he was the guy on OMAG, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've seen him do vintage styles before, but – I totally have a soft spot in my heart for this one. A while ago, we made Aphrodisiac the book of the year, and I think that was sort of the progenitor on that. And we've seen a couple of – this is definitely owes something to Aphrodisiac, I think. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, it was really funny. Like, this was their best script they've done so far. And not just comic book. Like, it was actually funny. Like, they're finally hitting a stride where they're able to figure out what kind of jokes they're able to tell and what they want to tell. And it actually – has that feeling of, wow, they're getting away with something. There's a lot of double entendre in this one because it's the late 70s and you got Luke Cage. There's a whole, like, a racial undercurrent. The bad guy's called the white man, so just every time they say it, it means something other than just what they're talking about. And then there's my favorite gag in it is that I can't even say Iron Fist keeps powering up his fist and then getting blueballed.
it just takes him too long to set it up, and then he doesn't get to punch anything, and then he's just sitting there. Yeah, come on.
And it's such an obvious gag, but it is played to wonderful effect, and it's a ton of fun. And you know, there's just a bunch of great segments here, and it's such a fun period to play around with and to be both reverent of, but also be able to make fun of it. Deadpool apparently exists in all times. At one time, he knows current things. He knows things from back then, but he basically
he has an afro.
Yeah, but it's just part of his mask, so it doesn't count.
I really liked it that Luke Cage thought that he was black. Thought that Deadpool was black, and then Iron Fist says he's not so much white. He looks like a candle, which I thought was a really interesting joke.
there's a really wonderful sequence where with some sex.
There is,
and it's one of those like. You know the old joke films where you cut to a bunch of like vaguely suggestive B-roll?
It's like Austin Powers with the fruit you know, blocking key things, but this was with it wasn't called Battleship, but that's what it was. It was Game of Battleship.
I think it's like a Python sketch or something where like they cut to like a train like going into a tunnel and it's black and white and there's a bunch of things like that. But Jerry Duggan on Twitter told me what the original script was for this page, and this was all added by Koblish. Like, it was, you know, the most of it wasn't there. So all these jokes is they cut to a phone off the hook and a rose and a beaver, a ball going into the ninth hole, a peg falling out of the battleship board, Kama Sutra. Like, it's a butt of rocket, of course, going off. Yeah. Like, ton of fun. Every single page, every single panel, they're putting a lot into it, and they're having fun, and they've really hit a stride. And there was honestly nothing else that was even close to being pick of the week this week. So it was a really fun issue.
What is the story that's being told through the flashbacks? Like, what is it that's happening?
I don't know. Well, in the seventh one, it told the story of the demon, I think, who became the part of the second big arc.
Yes, yeah.
And in this one, the white man, it's a see every time. It's
the white man, and he's basically like an albino pimp.
It's even funnier when you say it out loud, but it's a device to get him into the present, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's turned to stone by his pimp cane that he got from the Mandarin.
Yeah.
And then he's left made of stone for decades, and we see like what's on television throughout all the generations, and then some guys try to steal the statue or knock it over, and he gets unfrozen and is now in the modern day. And
so that's a lawyer.
That's going to be a modern concern. The white man.
He might be a lawyer, but you know, we cut to Luke Cage, and so there may be another current day team up.
That was a Phil Hartman joke. I got that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also,
Phil Hartman was a comedian.
Yes.
In the 90s.
Well, sounds good.
So what's cool, too, I guess, is that if you're into the continuity, like, it actually literally fits into everything, too, in whatever strange way. Like, all these are, it's not just a dalliance, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But you could totally go read this issue, and I would recommend it. If what we're talking about sounds like fun, you could go read this issue. You don't have to read anything else if you don't want to. But, you know, overall, here's a sentence that I'm uncomfortable saying. Deadpool's been pretty good.
I don't even know what a Hoboken seesaw is.
I don't either.
That's one of my favorite jokes. So Conan the Barbarian, number 19.
Yeah, you may remember that we talked before, and it was a 3-issue dream sequence.
Yeah.
Well, this was the 3rd issue of it, and I must say, yeah, I know. Did you stop reading?
I did.
Well, wow.
I can't. I can't deal with it.
This was a little more straightforward. It wasn't like dreamscapey. It was, you know, so everything sort of acted like it was the real life. But it was a vision of what Conan's, I guess, subconscious wants his life to end up as. So, like, he ends up on an island somewhere in the middle of nowhere, some beautiful island with fruit and everything.
The pitch is funnier himself than I'm sure it is.
Sure. He's with Belit, and they, you know, they have 2 kids, and they just stay there, and nobody comes and bothers them. And he grows old and dies. End of story.
So it's over. I've ended it.
No, because it's what he actually wanted. And then he wakes up in the whatever the hash den they're in, and she's like, "So what were you dreaming about?" And he's like, "Don't worry about it. No big deal. Let's go kill some people."
It was like when Picard learned to play the flute in his alternate life, and he grew the weird hair. But then he came back, and it was just the Enterprise.
Let's be. Any time that Patrick Stewart has any kind of hair on, it's weird.
Yeah.
So that's not.
So is this the end of it? This arc is only how it starts again.
It's the end of the arc. It's like a character exploration. So you kind of know what's going on. I don't think in his mind, because I don't think he's necessarily conscious of it, but you kind of know it. And while I thought that the story was interesting, it was cool like that. I don't know that I like that. I don't know that I want Conan to have an inner, like a desire for a peaceful inner life.
You know what an angsty Conan?
Yeah,
we're actually going to be talking about this later in one of the audience questions. But I kind of agree with you. I don't want to know that much about Conan's interior life.
To be fair, really, a lot of this has been about that, because the thing is, you know, the arc is very fatherly. You know, it's about Bailey may or may not be pregnant. Do we know that she's pregnant? She is, or she lost the baby, and they're dealing with it like he. I don't know, but
great time to be hanging out in an opium den.
The only way, the only way to really, like, there's going to have to be a lot of bloodshed to sort of clear all this touchy feely Conan stuff away, because this isn't necessarily why I will read Conan. But that being said, you know, it's interesting, it's well done. I'm not angry at it. It sits oddly with me.
Yeah, I just want to say it's not like I need Conan to be just like a mindless reaver all the time.
He's not the Punisher.
But look, yeah, there are things you read Conan for. Conan drives his enemies before him. That's what he does.
Yeah.
Don't cry about it.
There was definitely lamentation.
I watch it for the audio commentary.
His lamentations.
Yeah, yeah.
When the women.
She had some lament, I believe.
Not his enemies, though.
That's the line, though.
Right.
The lamentation of the enemies' women. So I guess Belit isn't that.
Right,
but you could be.
Well, I'm hopefully he chops somebody up in the next issue.
It's almost they kind of have to. It was an interesting experiment. I don't know.
He has a quota to fill.
He's got to.
It'll just be one long issue, like the last act, last minuscule act.
I don't know what's going on over there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Connor. Listen, he's doing his level best. So
I'm sleepy.
He's also like he's barely holding his head up. Apparently,
I'm waiting for a book to come along that I read. Here we go, Ultimate Spider-Man 25. Here's one.
So, what'd you think?
I like it. Yeah. It was, you know, we had Miles struggling with his superhero identity, whether or not he wanted to be one anymore after the death of his mother, and they didn't drag it out too long. They had just a right amount of time for him to worry about it while other things were happening in the background, and now he's back in the suit.
I agree. I think that it was. it was the right amount of time. Like, we came back a year later, and I think it lasted, what, 3 issues?
Yeah, about that.
And I there's a couple of, the reason that I wanted to bring this up is because I just think Bendis is really good at this kind of thing, and because he's created characters who are interesting, like, we can sit here and read this for a long time, and it kind of doesn't get bored. I noticed something that I hadn't noticed before, but his buddy Genki, like, isn't fat and goofy anymore.
No, they kind of...
He's trimmed down a bit.
Yeah.
He's older, right? Also, Miles is sort of taller and more muscular.
Well, they're only a year older, I think. But the difference between 13 and 14 can be fairly similar.
Right, so Genki's a little bit, like... I don't want to say handsomer, but he's a little thinner.
Yeah. And then Jessica Drew shows up. This Jessica Drew as opposed to the spider other one, the clone. And there's a really sort of nice exploration of who she is and what she's doing. And I just liked this. The second to last page I thought was really well done, and it was actually quite affecting to me. It was a nice bit of comic book melodrama. And really he has placed, by that last thing that the mother said, you know, he really placed the hero in this untenable position, this rock in a hard place. And all the forces are going against each other, and he's just trying to do the right thing. And it's very Spider-Man without being a retread. And I think that's what I liked about it.
Yeah, he does find the spirit of Spider-Man in Miles without just repeating the power of responsibility thing.
And that's impressive. I mean, that's tough to do.
Yeah. He's dialed into this character of Spider-Man, whoever it is, Peter Parker, Miles Morales. Spider-Man is this essential element that is in both of them, and he's really dialed into what that means. Drew a bit.
Yeah.
I continue to enjoy the remaining, you know, friends of Peter Parker and their relationship with Aunt May. So Gwen Stacy is just sleeping on her couch when Aunt May gets in, and it's kind of like, I don't know, it's like the Huxtables, like, these kids will never go away. They'll never leave me alone, cuz, you know, back in the day when Peter was still swinging around, that house, that place was the hub for all of the teen superheroes, and Aunt May was sort of like the den mother to all of them. And I like that continues to be a thing that doesn't just go away when Peter dies. So
the house is for sale, though. Panel, first page.
Yeah.
Yep.
Didn't notice that, but that group is still important.
No, I agree. And it's neat. It's good stuff.
And the art too. We should mention Dave Marquez.
Yeah.
Continues to be wonderful in this book.
Yeah, and gets better. Just keeps, you know, like every issue he does, I find something to be impressed with. So,
okay, I actually want to leapfrog in the script and go to Nova number 6 first, because it sort of ties in with the Ultimate Spider-Man conversation. This is the first Zeb Wells issue, coming up from Jeff Loeb's swift departure from the series that we've grown to enjoy. Mm-hmm. This was, I think this stuck the landing.
He's really good, Zeb Wells.
Yeah, it's still strong. It's not, obviously there isn't the history that's in Ultimate Spider-Man. It's not nearly, we don't nearly have that experience with the characters yet. But I think given time and proper attention, we could get there. But I really like the relationship between this kid Nova and his mom, and he's got a little sister, and it's not quite the Peter Parker Aunt May relationship, because she's not as old as Aunt May, and so it's a little bit different. And the fact that Dad is missing, and that he's sort of the man of the house is kind of interesting. Although I think he has the same girlfriend as Miles Morales. It's still a girl with pink hair and piercings. So that's kind of interesting.
Well, one day she's at school, the next day she's home, and she's got a boyfriend home, boyfriend at school.
Yeah. So it's that's a little bit odd, but I like the continuing adventures of this Nova kid, and kind of weird, you know. I miss the Abnett and Lanning era of Guardians of the Galaxy, but Nova and Star-Lord are kind of samey. So I think it's okay to have a new Nova here, and a lot of people are raging at me for even suggesting that. But
we've always made the joke that the Nova Corps is just a rip off of the Green Lantern Corps, kind of is. But in the same way, you can have Hal Jordan, Kyle Rayner, and Kai Gardner, and John Stewart, and whoever the new guy's name is. You can You can have multiple Novas. There's a little core of them. Right?
Yeah.
So Richard Rider can still come back and still be Nova. You know, so I think it's cool.
Yeah,
I really did like that first arc. I kind of loved it as a piece, like as a whole story. I thought about it though. I might still check it out because I do like Zeb Wells a lot. But I think that
it's usually it doesn't skip a beat, you know.
Yeah.
Although it's, you know, I think it's a bit of a breather after the end of the previous arc. So it's sort of, and at the end, it's like a call to adventure. Now he's going to join the Avengers after asking his mom for permission to join the Avengers. Yeah. So, so that was sort of the whole extent of the issue. So I guess next time it's actually going to be tying into Infinity. So that'll be the next big conflict, I think. So we'll keep an eye on it.
Now, I really got a chance to get up on Grump Mountain, talk about Batman 66 number one.
Me?
Yeah, you don't like this book.
I did not like it. Well, I mean,
You don't like the original property.
I have no affinity.
No
for
affinity
it.
For it.
And I've tried because I recognize that my prior stance on it was that's stupid. I don't know why people would like it. Where my current stance is, I totally get why people would like it, and I have no problem with it. I just don't like it. So that's an evolution of sorts.
Yes, it is. You've mellowed. I think there's three interesting things about this particular book. This is the paper issue of the first two digital comics, and there's three things to talk about. One is the story, two is the delivery system, and three is the schedule. Because they basically put this paper issue out on the same day that the third chapter hit
right.
the digital stores, which was sort of unheard of in their digital first comic.
What does that say?
I think they were trying to get it out for Comic-Con because there's a big presence for Batman 66 at Comic-Con. As we record this, there's been tons of toys on the floor. There's rumors of more announcements to come, but they haven't happened yet as we record. But clearly it's one of the bags, you know, it's one of the sponsored bag images.
Yes.
So clearly this is a big push on this property. The logo is all over the place. It's in the DC booth. All of the DC employees are wearing Batman 66 t-shirts in the booth.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that's what happens.
They're going in on this whole hard. So I think they had to get out. It was just funny because I was reading the digital comics. I was waiting for the third chapter to come out, knowing this book was coming, and reading and reading and reading. What's funny is I read the first two chapters in digital format, the third one in paper, because I was traveling for con and I didn't have my iPad with me. And I really do enjoy the digital experience much more of the way that they add the artwork, they add the letterbox, the lettering, they add the dialogue.
Yeah, I do as well.
I like that much more than just reading it static on the paper page.
Yeah. So you know, our recommendation, I think, would be if you want to check this out, go with the digital. It really actually does. It doesn't. It's not gimmicky. I don't think. I think it. It actually really does. Augment the experience. And this is that DC squared kind of thing where the word balloons pop in the order in which you should read them, and the sound effects come in, and you'll even see a batarang zip across the page. It's not animation, it's not motion comics, it's just the rhythm at which the panel changes.
And the thing is, I wouldn't want every comic like that.
Exactly.
But I think for this particular comic, with the subject matter, the campy 60 story, I think for this one particularly, it works.
Yeah,
I don't want that for all DC comics, but I think just the way it sort of has, you're right, the rhythm of the show sort of is in the rhythm of the page, as the Batman punches the Riddler and bam, pops up on the screen. That's how the show did it. That's how Dad did it. I thought that particularly works for this book.
Yeah, I think Jonathan Case's stuff is really, really fantastic. The layouts are so good, and it's the right amount of likenesses for the characters.
Kind of bugs me, Alfred. And
kind of bugs you?
Alfred the Commissioner, so I really like far off from the actors, but the rest of them are really good.
Well, I think they work for the world of the
world. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, it's not a deal breaker, obviously, but. It's just like he's so on the target for the rest of them. It's just bizarre that Alfred and the Commissioner are so off.
Listen, the important thing is Chief O'Hara lives. Chief O'Hara is back, and
he gets to save the day at the end.
And he's got his arm in a sling, and he's like, I don't know, he's like Captain Haddock in this book. He's fantastic, and
he talks to an authentic Irish brogue.
Yeah, Jeff Parker's script on this really, really good. It's even better than his Adventures of Superman stuff. Which is super strong. So Super. It's an adjective. No, but it's really, really, really good.
Yeah, and I love
the color, and looks even better in digital. So
yeah, it's great.
So if you want to buy a tablet on which you can read this,
please do.
Head on over to ifanboy.com/Amazon, where we get a bit of the commission.
Yeah, so let's say that you're a purchaser for a large company and you need to buy like a large amount of tablets.
Yeah.
It would be awesome to go through our link to do that.
Yeah.
We would appreciate that.
That's the way to do it. Get a bunch of, you know, Kindle Fire HDs, I guess.
I can't recommend that.
No?
Okay.
You could buy iPads, right? You could buy iPads.
That's what I'm saying. That's what you want to do.
Do that.
Yeah. As opposed
doesn't
to...
cost you a penny, takes a little bit out of Amazon's pocket, and ours helps us pay for server costs, and staff, and lights, and overhead, and hookers, and blow. None of those things are cheap.
Yeah, we've actually been having the hookers do the lighting, and it's not working out.
Yeah, they're not good at it.
Turns out hookers are terrible at lighting.
Side story, one guy at my staffers, who was not me, was offered cocaine last night at the party. Let's move on.
What I like about that story is that depending on who's listening, that's either a or a because it's such a different, like, I don't know. But either way, there we go. I bet I know which one, and I bet he doesn't need it.
So I go away to San Diego for 1 week. We start talking about old books on the show. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, we're going to be talking about The Death of Haggard West, which technically came out last week, but I'm sure a bunch of you, like me, didn't get it until later and are probably waiting for your shops to order some. I actually bought this directly from Amazon because I didn't know how else to get it. This is a Paul Pope book, and this is the precursor sort of to his Battling Boy story, which is coming out in the fall from First Second Press. And sensibly, this is the final issue, even though it's sort of a one shot. It's The Death of Haggard West, and issue number 101 of the Invincible Haggard West, and it's some Paul Pope goodness. And basically, the idea is there's some scary crow like bad guys who wait out on telephone wires for kids who don't go inside when the streetlights go on, because that's when all good little boys and girls should go in. And they start attacking them and their moms and stuff. And it's told in that very cool Paul Pope, like, feral art kind of way. And then Haggard West shows up and dies. And that's where Battling Boy comes in for his new book that's coming out in the fall. So this is sort of the story of, like, if the Superman or the Batman, more like it, of that world died, and the new replacement kid superhero is coming in. And it's all told as if this is the 101st issue of something that has existed for 101 issues, even though this is the only one that exists. But if you love Paul Pope, it's well worth getting. Seek it out.
Cool.
Good stuff.
We don't tend to talk about Invincible so much anymore. I mean, Paul, you don't read it, right?
No.
Yeah, and Connor reads it in trade. So it was me and Ron on the issues, but now it's just me. And it really is one of those things that's at 104 issues, not unlike its sort of sister book, The Walking Dead. And you know what you're going to get. So it's usually very consistent and pretty good. Something's going to get a tooth punched out. You know what you're in for. But it doesn't mean that it's not good, and I think I like to bring it up every once in a while. This issue 104 was notable to me, and I was like, hey, look, a reason to talk about this is that I just blanked on his name. The bad guy with the brain head
Brad.
Yeah, but I knew it completely until I was about to start talking about it. But he's been the sort of villain all along, and Angstrom Levy, and
right.
that came to me without looking it up. He shows up and he's really got the Joker thing going, where he's thought of everything. He's got Adam Eve trapped, and she's pregnant, and if she uses her powers, then it'll kill the baby, and so she can't do anything about it. And he sent Mark off into some other dimension where he finds another Mark who is eating another Mark because there's no food. Yeah, there's a bunch of Invincibles there, and they've been there forever, so they they've some of them have gone, like, they're all like alternate marks, so they've, you know, resorted to cannibalism. Or
so we finally got the Walking Dead Invincible crossover.
In a sense, not really a zombie, just crazy.
Sure.
So a bunch of them fight. But it took because I think that Kirkman is pretty savvy. He thought, well, I have to change this around in some way. And someone talks sense to Engstrom Levy, and basically he kind of repents. He's like, yeah, you're right. What am I doing? And then some other things happen that also make a twist. And it was interesting. It was cool, and it had a twist. I'm sure it's not an ending, but a turn on one of the really, really good bad guys that they have for this book, one of the good nemeses that they've had.
I always enjoy reading Invincible when it comes out of trade. It's always a nice read. Yeah.
Yes.
Thor, God of Thunder 10 is the fourth and fifth issue, so the second to last chapter of the God Bomb. I assume the end of the story. I can't imagine it continuing after this next issue. But
we're going to get into some Dark Elf stuff for the next arc, I think.
But it'll be the end of this God Killer story, which has been just absolutely wonderful.
Do we know? Do we? Is Ribic staying on?
No.
The next arc, I think, is Garney.
Yes, right? It's Ron Garney. Yeah.
That's very different.
The next major arc, anyway. I don't know if that's. Anyways, this book's great.
Anyway, I quit.
I wanted to mention this because it continues to be awesome. And Thor uses two Mjolnirs. He's got two hammers, and he's hammering away at the God Bomb, which is, it's really cool conceptually. And I also like the bit where one of the berserkers punches through the back of one of the gods, grabbing his heart, and then his hand of black evil energy turns into a crow, and in the same sort of velocity carries that heart off to the God Bomb to continue to power it. And just another great visual from Esad Ribic. And this is the same issue that had Old King Thor crucified to a comet, basically. it's completely over the top and amazing.
If you look on the page that's facing the heart grabbing, there's a great sketchy technique that he's been using.
Yes, there is.
Which where the art sort of devolves into sketches, I guess, to show the velocity. And it's just wonderful. The techniques that Rubik's using are great. I don't know anything about bomb disposal, but I have watched a lot of movies with it. I don't think hitting it with hammers is a good idea.
Yeah, well, Thor's not, you know, he's not the smartest Avenger.
Right. He's not Tony Stark. He will hit things with a hammer when hammering needs to be done, but
I believe it's the everything is a nail theorem.
Well,
and he'll never learn because it was
looks like a nail.
It was Old King Thor's suggestion. You're Thor. Hit it with a hammer.
It's worked for him so far. You can't fault results.
I also have a feeling it's going to work out in the end.
The thing I thought was good about this is that when we talked about this the last time, it was Pick of the Week, I think was the last issue. We were talking about how Gore came off as, you know, well, he's not, you know, maybe he's not all that bad. In this one, he kills his wife, so he is bad.
For calling him a god.
Yeah. Would you call me? It was his Marty McFly moment.
Or it was his opposite Ghostbusters moment, to bring it back to last week.
Yeah, that's true.
You know. Someone has to fear God. You say no.
Well, he was bringing a whole other thing to that conversation. So,
100 bullets.
Yeah. So historically, I started off with 100 bullets a long time ago. I liked it a lot. I got lost somewhere in the 50s, and I thought I'm not enjoying this anymore. So I stopped reading it. And since then, people have told me, no, it's really good. So I thought, well, this is a standalone thing. I'll read this because Azzarello and Eduardo Risso have come back to do a miniseries. In a movement at Vertigo I like to call Let's Go Back to the Well, along with Sandman. If they come out with another Preacher series, so help me, I will stop reading comics. I make you that promise.
I think that's totally reasonable.
Yeah.
You know, at one time, Ron promised to drop all Marvel books that they renumbered on Uncanny X-Men.
So there's a precedent for me not following my word if that happens.
Yeah, exactly.
So there you go. Now I'm like, I'm reading it. I thought, well, I'll probably know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. I kind of do. I think it's related to what the other stuff was. So I can't say it's excellent standalone. But again, in the middle of this, Eduardo Risso draws some really beautiful stuff. But I don't know if it's him and Azzarello or what. But there's a couple of places where I just completely have no idea what's going on. and it's a wonderful tone, and there's some great dialogue, and, you know, he draws some sexy women. You've got to give him that. Right. But it's the same thing that made me stop reading it the first time. So if you liked it the first time, you're probably like, this is great. It's more of the same. If you were lost like me, you're going to probably be more lost. So I'm going to give it another shot. I dropped off Spaceman before it finished too, because I was like, I don't know what this is.
I think you want to like him more than you do.
I agree with you very much.
Although, we'll talk about Wonder Woman in a minute. Let's get to that later.
Okay.
Let's Revival.
Are either of you guys reading this?
No.
This is a great
book.
This is the one that they're doing this wonderful, low-key, slow-burn horror book. I saw somebody say, if you like Walking Dead, you should read this. And I was like, yes, this is exactly that. Because it really is hard to find a book that sort of fits in that mold. Well, it's not, you know, end of the world. It feels close to it. And Tim Seeley and Mike Norton it's a really wonderful book, I've got to say. And I very much recommend it. I think the second trade just came out.
Yes, it did.
So I mean, if you've been thinking about it or you're not sure, you're on the fence, like, go check out that first trade and then the second one. It's a really wonderful story. And I fear that it's good in such a low-key way that no one will read it. I'm sure, you know, it's still going. It's fine, but I very, very recommend it. And this issue had this really cool Scotty Young cover on the front.
Yeah, it was nice.
This is our best of covers.
Yep.
Our own Jeff Reed is actually sending me the first trade, so I'm going to read that and the second trade. And it also loaded up on Harvey nominations.
Yes, it did.
It did very well for itself.
Batman right. Beyond Unlimited 18 is our second digital first. As groceries get unpacked behind me, our second digital first comic. This one is the collection of the Batman Beyond Universe books, and this was notable because almost the entire thing is basically a Barbara Gordon Batgirl story in which a new Batgirl in the Beyond Universe pops up and ends up saving Barbara Gordon's life, and they sort of have an intertwined adventure for most of the issue. It was really, really good.
Mm.
So if you like, you know, if you missed Batgirl, it's written by Scott Peterson, but it has a nice feeling, but it's all like kind of a spunky girl. Which I've been missing because I haven't read the regular book. So it was really, really good. And if you like the Beyond Universe or Batgirl or Barbara Gordon or whatever, it was really good. I haven't been loving the other Metal Men, so I've been not thrilled with that. But it was a very short part of the book. It was mostly the Batgirl story. So worth checking out.
Cool. So that is all the books that we had to talk about this week. And now we like to go through a little bit about what the iFanboy community had thought. So we're going to start off with the top five picks of the week. Some surprises in here. Number five, Dream Thief number 3 with 5.1%. These could change by the time you hear them. Prophet number 37 at number 4 with 6.7%. Good spread. Deadpool number 13, my pick of the week at 12%. Wonder Woman number 22 at 13.2%. And the plurality leader, Thor God of Thunder number 10 at 35.1%. So it was a good little week. I know it wasn't like what an amazing week, but normally the week of San Diego, you're just deluged with comics like we got last week. Basically everybody had the idea, well, let's do it the week before, and then everybody did, so they just moved the week up one.
You can make your votes by going to fm.com/comics, making your pull list, rating and reviewing your books, and deciding your pick of the week, and that's how we get the numbers.
There you go.
Let's take a look at a review for Wonder Woman number 22 by Wheelhands. Story 4 out of 5, art 5 out of 5. Pick of the week percentage, as we said, 13.2%. From the cover to the last page, this was a superb issue, a proverbial wet dream for fans of the fourth world, and who knew it would happen in the pages of Wonder Woman. And similar to Azzarello's Orion, the updated vision of New Genesis is inspired and original, while simultaneously remaining true to the original. As soon as they walked through the boom tube, I wanted to go right back. I would argue that they've been kind of teasing this for a long time in Wonder Woman. I mean, I think if you're a Fourth World fan, you've been enjoying Earth 2 and then this because of Orion's involvement. And I think it's been all leading up to this. And I think it for the most part, lived up to that.
One of the best issues of the series.
Yeah, yeah,
really,
definitely.
Really good.
I love the relationship between Wonder Woman and Orion, and I like the depiction of Orion as being like trying to compose himself. Like it's sort of like this Beauty and the Beast thing. He's got this horrible inner, you know, demon just like that sometimes makes its presence known physically. So he has that ugly face, but then he can sort of keep that under wraps. And
she puts her hand on his shoulder and she sort of, you know, calms down and his face returns to normal.
This is just a metaphor for acne, right?
Yeah. I thought High Father was very true. He's still a little bit dark side in him in this version.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that basically no matter what Orion did, he could not win with his dad. Like, you're wrong. There's one great page where he's sort of sulking in the corner.
Yeah.
Behind that father, because there's nothing he's doing is working out until the very end when his plan is unveiled and it, you know, works. I really, this is a great issue. It's probably
cool. And then High Father also calls him a dog at one point.
Yeah.
And then I also like that at the end of last issue we thought that what Lennox was gone for good, and then they raised the hope that he might be out there somewhere. And then his decapitated head is thrown, broken jawed, to the ground by the firstborn. So pulling no punches. And then Azzarello returns as War.
Yeah.
So kind of interesting book.
That's clearly him.
Yeah. So.
Next up, Krayez247 wrote about Justice League of America's Vibe number 6. Gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5 with a pick of the week percentage of 0.2%. Pete Wood's art still remains constant and fluid, a hard quality to find in art these days. Sterling Gates takes the reader by surprise with an unexpected setup and a shocking cliffhanger that will leave you with more questions than answers. The end of this issue is something you do not want to miss.
I missed it.
I missed all of them.
It was good. This book continues to be surprisingly good. I'm not going to last looking at the sales numbers, but not too much longer. But while it's here, I'm enjoying it. In this issue, Cisco, or Vibe, loses one brother and gains another, who we thought was dead, which is the big cliffhanger. He appears, who apparently had been living in another dimension as one of Darkseid's minions. Really, really well done. Pete Woods is solid. You know, he's a really solid comic artist, and he knows that, you know, he knows what he's doing. He's one of those guys around forever.
You know what you're going to get with a Pete Woods.
Yeah, he's good. I just find that the relationship between Vibe and the is it Argo? What is this government group? Whatever the group is, you know, with
Argo.
Yeah, I find it very interesting. You know, Argus. They've got him under their boot, but he doesn't want to be there. He still fights them, and it's good. I really liked it.
Cool. So that is all of the user reviews for this week. Again, like they said, if you want to go to ifmo.com/comics, you can pull your comics, rate and review them there. If you get them in early enough, usually, if you say you're into writing reviews on Thursday, that might be a good move for you.
Yeah,
we can pick them out and read them on the show if we deem them thus worthy.
Try to review the things that we're not going to talk about for a long time, but also want to have on the show. It's fine.
Try to get into our heads and know.
Yes.
So let's move along to some audience questions. We've got some questions today. Let's see how many we can fit in before I assume there should be some sort of zombie parade crawl that will come sweep up everything in its path.
Listen,
Connor included.
If about 20 minutes into the show, I still got really hungry. And so minutes level's already low. I'm about to die.
I know that you are closer right now to a Baja Fresh than...
No, it's closed.
It is?
Yeah.
Windows boarded up.
I'm
Josh doesn't know what to do. He's it's the bot. It's gone.
Is there a trash can out front with a fire in it?
No, but I might do that anyway.
Guys, it's over.
Pack it up. That's okay.
We need to talk about this.
Last night anyway on the podcasting panel, so we might as well just end it now.
Okay, it's 95 degrees in, like, here, like, inside. So we need to...
Listen, as bad as that is, there's no Baja Fresh near me, Paul. And I think really that's what we need to focus on.
I walked up there every day last year for lunch.
Yes.
Wow.
You walked. Josh doesn't walk anywhere.
No, I do. I like to walk.
Josh doesn't get out of bed.
It's actually pretty far from the convention center.
Yeah.
Alan from Piss Cat Away... New Jersey I always enjoyed reading about the origins of superheroes and even villains to learn what made them into who they are, but most of the time I always found it more interesting when a comic character is more mysterious and found them more fun to read. Let's take Wolverine, for example. He was so much cooler to read when his past was hidden, and when Marvel decided to reveal his entire background after the House of M, they took the fun out of him. Lately, with Thanos Rising, his childhood was observed to explain why he has become the Mad Titan, but that to me was a story not even necessary to explain. I don't think comics should have to over-explain things. Look what happened to Darth Vader's tragedy. Not knowing can be more fun than knowing. What do you guys think?
You are absolutely right, Alan, but the reasoning is very mundane and business-like.
Yeah.
We've talked to people at Marvel. The reason why they did Wolverine Origins, the reason why they did Thanos Rising is because the comic book side of things wants to be in control of the characters. So they don't, you know, Fox announces they're doing a Wolverine Origins movie, so they don't want Fox to define Wolverine's origin.
Yeah. Jason Aaron actually responded to this question about Thanos Rising, I think, on Twitter, and he said that this information, like all the milestone moments, were already out there, and he's just filling in the blanks. I kind of agree with Alan from Piss Cat Away, New Jersey. I like saying that. In that, I don't want those blanks to be filled in necessarily. I was watching the Solomon Kane movie yesterday, which finally came to America after it's been out for like 3 years in Europe. Not saying that it's great and it was worth the wait, but they fill in a lot of the blanks for Solomon Kane, a Robert E. Howard character, that it's the same thing as like we were talking with Conan, you know, in the dream stuff. Like I think it robs it a bit of the mystery and romance of the character if we get too much of their interior life.
There are characters who can be explored endlessly. And then there are ones who shouldn't. I think, you know, Batman seems to be an endless well of exploring him, seeing what's going on. Tony Soprano. But what I always like is if you think about when you set up like a really good sort of team or an ensemble, and there's going to be a couple of characters who are up front, you know everything about it. There's going to be that one character that you don't know anything about. They're just ambiguous and they're strange. You know, it's like the female in The Boys. You know, there was things like that, and there's always one of those. And Wolverine got to be that character for quite a long time, but you know the market takes over. It, you know, because you know
they're just concerned to step in. That's just what happens.
Yeah, you know, and that's just the way it is. But you know, it is fun to have a character who's completely, you know, ambiguous and mysterious, and it's cool to do that. But you know, you can't always have. We totally agree. You know what I like? I like as a way of dealing with that. What they've done with the Joker. I think that's been one of the best ways that they can still, you know, sell books and tell those stories. Yeah. But maybe he's just nuts and that's not, none of it's true.
It's optional.
I remember watching The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
And he started to explain about his dad and I was like, oh my God, they're going to do this here. And then they got away from it by that same thing. Like he just keeps telling different stories to different people. And I was like, that's great.
Perfect.
So that's, you know, you can't do that with everybody, but for that, it's a really elegant solution.
Yeah.
We're with you, Alan, from Piscataway.
It's really hot there in Piscataway right now.
I guarantee it. If it's hot in New Hampshire, it's hot in New Jersey. Dave writes in and says, Connor's pick of the week for the first chapter of DC's summer event, Trinity Wars in Justice League number 22, is one of many first issues of event comics that have been well received by both yourselves and the iFan base. First issues have always have the promise of a good story and get readers invested in the event. My question is, what event comics had final issues that lived up to this standard? What events nailed the landing? And whenever we talk about this, there's always the inevitable, well, what's defined an event? But we'll try to keep that cool. It's a tough question. I really struggled to think of something. I think for the vast majority of readers, I feel like people were really happy with Blackest Night all the way through.
Blackest Night, I would say Infinite Crisis. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go all the way back to Crisis on Infinite Earths, but I guess that's out of our range.
What was the
Siege?
Siege. That was the one I was going to say. That was a really good one for me.
Lots of people liked Civil War. We didn't so much, but lots of people did all the way through. Mm-hmm. Stupid Cap and MySpace.
Yeah.
which I can't believe I still remember.
It's the exception rather than the rule, but it does happen enough that it's not completely strange.
No, it's not completely out of the realm that'll happen.
No.
Not fear itself.
I think that the way that we
Daily Avengers?
Yeah. Well,
comic event.
Image United has the potential.
It lives on in their hearts, Paul.
It's in your mind, in your hearts.
Yeah. Yeah. I always want to say 52, but it's different.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, it
yeah,
is like
yeah, that
was
really
it's a but it was a, well, if you want to call it an event, say that it took place in the other books or whatever.
Just so
but,
different storytelling wise than the other ones.
Yeah, but I mean, but given what it was, 52 weekly issues by four different writers, it's amazing that that turned out as well as it did.
Isn't it?
It totally is, and it's such to the extent that like, Geoff Johns came out of that thing raging.
Yeah.
Mark Waid and Greg Rucka were knocked out of commission for 2 years.
They were broken.
Yeah. And then, you know, Grant Morrison was Grant Morrison and it was fine. Like it was really, you know, but then they all came back stronger from that. I'm still amazed that happened. I can't see how that would happen. I mean, they tried to repeat it a bunch of times and it never even came close.
Like the events themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There you go. You know, it can happen, but I think those are the most recent. Sieges, there must be a better Marvel one than that, but that's the one that, you know.
I think most people would point to Civil War. We wouldn't, but most people would.
I don't even remember how it ended.
Remember, he didn't know anything about Americans, so he surrendered.
Yeah, that's dumb.
Didn't know MySpace and NASCAR.
When this started, my underwear was light blue.
I don't want you to finish that sentence.
Okay.
No, not even
I too.
Bit.
It's Cadet Blue.
That's excellent. Paul, you want to read the next one?
Sure. Callum from the Isle of Man. Mm. Are there any regular letter columns from past or present that you particularly enjoyed, and do you wish that they were sometimes included in trade collections? Other than Next Wave's fictitious column, I always enjoy the Walking Dead and Thor God of Thunder's columns and find that they add quite a lot to the monthly experience.
This is a Connor. You do you still read all the letter columns?
No. I haven't in years.
Yeah, I can't say I do so much either. I think that I mean, in general, the internet interaction has kind of taken over for that.
Yeah.
That being said,
I haven't brought back in a big way though, especially at Marvel.
Definitely, and
I still read them.
And I don't read them either. And I'll see them. And that you know, part of that is just there's a lot of comic books, so like I got to get to the next one, which is a problem. It's a modern age problem that I'm part of.
I do kind of you know look at them, and I think that one of the things Marvel does in some of the books is have the characters answer the questions, which is a fun exercise. But I wonder if the writers get paid for those extra pages. But I just don't read them.
I like the idea of them, but they feel like. Antiquated is not even the word. They just feel like they shouldn't be there anymore.
In the past, it was the only interaction you had.
Yeah.
So the relation, I read them all when I, you know, as a kid. But
I like it a lot better when the writer of the book is the person doing it, as opposed to, the editor. I think on some of Remender's books, I think it was Cap. Like Rick is the one who answers them, and it's more interesting. If you look at the Walking Dead one, is one that I always glance through the Walking Dead one. Because they're funny. I remember historically the Powers letter column was always interesting, it got real long. It kind of always
it's in
was.
Scarlet now,
but
which
now,
is still a thing.
I don't have the patience to. Scarlet is still a thing. I think the seventh issue came out this week.
It did.
I don't necessarily have the patience to listen to read the fan concerns about it because that's kind of feel like that's all we read all the time.
Yeah.
I think. But the reactions and the responses are sometimes interesting.
I'll read the stuff that like Joe Casey will write an essay in the back of his books. Mm-hmm.
Well, Greg Rucka.
I always read and of course and Lazarus.
More matter than the letter.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm just saying I'd prefer that. I prefer to hear from the writer than you know. I always look at Jason Aaron's picture with the helm. I just look to look at it, and then
not
I go to the next thing.
In that one. In this one.
Yeah.
I guess I don't always look at it. I read it digitally this time, so I didn't look at it.
Was it in there?
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com with your questions. You can also call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Hopefully you understood all of that.
They did. They took him out of it in this one.
Yeah.
It's a blue, fuzzy-headed godling thing. Why would you take out that picture?
Yeah.
I would understand if it's that weird picture Bendis from the Architects thing, but it's not. That should be destroyed. At least that's what I would say. So I got good news.
Oh boy.
This week coming up, there will be episode number 50 of the Make Comics podcast. It's in the bag. It's been recorded. It will go up. Me and Andy Schmidt are talking about I'll even tease what it's about. Say that you make it. You get past that first stage. You get hired. You become a comics professional. You get something published. What will you do then? Because your journey ain't over.
No, the riches don't follow.
It turns out there's still more to do. Oh. It turns out that if you've ever, say you've been on a hike or climbing on a bicycle and you see a crest in front of you and you're like, if I can just make that ridge, everything will be okay. And you get up to that ridge and then you turn and it turns out that what's in front of you is a lot longer than what's behind you.
Josh, bike metaphors make me uncomfortable.
I said hiking. Then again with you. All right, look at it this way. Imagine you're going down an avenue block, right?
which avenue?
You know, you're way up there, like on the east side, you know, where it just sort of disappears into nowhere.
Yes.
Ugh.
All right. Well, that's exciting. That is good news.
Yeah. You're over there by Bellevue. It's not, you don't, it's, that's on the east side, isn't it?
We got some special edition podcasts coming up. Theoretically, we're going to get some people together and talk about the Wolverine. If I can find anybody, we're going to do that. And then, of course, the Animation Brain Trust, or some of us, are going to be together for the Flashpoint Paradox.
Flashpoint Paradox.
That's the end of this month.
Yeah.
And we'll have some, I think in August we'll have some book explodes for you.
This thing's coming.
Yeah.
I've still got to finish reading Birthright so that I can listen to that. I'm on
also
like,
in August will be our 400th episode, which we're going to celebrate by doing an email show. So you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, subject line 400 for inclusion in that show. We'll try to get as many as we can. Not everyone will make it because we get a lot of emails, but so make your questions good, make them wacky, make them fun. We'll do an actual show. We'll probably do it live over the internet, and we'll have a good time. So episode 400 comes at the end of August. You've got a month to get your questions in.
Ooh.
And really, I think this week's show is a testament to the idea that you two are slowly being baked to death. And yeah. I'm just barely holding it together.
It's also it's also a testament to how good our internet connections normally are.
The thing with heat and when
really, really slow hotel connection here is not doing it. Not doing it
I'm just saying, normally we really take pains to make sure that it sounds good. But at a certain point, what are you going to do?
So this thing with heat is that after a while, you start smelling bad. But then if you wait a little longer, you start smelling delicious.
Well, I hate
that's the roasting process.
That's the roasting process. This,
but I'm mere moments away from jumping in a pool.
You're a golden god?
I just feel like I'm going to be
on drugs.
In the water. And
Connor was the person he was talking about, and he said yes to the cocaine. It says San Diego in the script. What is that?
I just thought if there's anything, Connor is in San Diego. He's there. Is there anything we need to know? Any updates from the? Have you
How
gone?
How would he know he's there?
I know.
I've gone to San Diego. I've been there. I've seen it. It is real. There's no Baja Fresh though.
What?
That's really a big takeaway from the weekend. So
yeah, I got to tell you, that changes everything for me. Because
for you. You try walking up there and seeing it and pour it up. Then what do you do?
That's like that.
We do a French place on the block.
That's like that old Deep Thoughts cartoon. That Deep Thoughts cartoon.
Right.
But the joke about sometimes I like to pack the kids into the car and say, come on, we're going to Disneyland. And then I drive to an old abandoned warehouse on the outside of town and said, oh no, Disneyland burned down.
It's kind of like that. It's kind of.
It's exactly like that.
Yeah.
Stop licking that. Cocker Spaniel's licking the lawn gnome again. Stop it. You'll get splinters.
Next week we return to normal.
Well.
Yeah. In the meantime, what can they do, Paul?
Would you stop? Okay. Check out ifanboy.com for the pick of the week review and more in-depth comic book balls. That's what it says. And all the important news and discussion topics. Go to ifanboy.com/about to see the staff of iFanboy and their social network links. Follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy and stay in touch on facebook.com/ifanboy.
That sound you heard was me turning the air conditioner on. I can't take this shit. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. And everyone at home is going, I don't hear anything, and I could have had it on the whole time. You can email us at contact@ifanboy. Like he said, if you want to send in an email for do the what did we title it? Podcast episode or episode 400 question?
Episode 400. I just subject line 400.
Okay, so, there you go.
400.
Try to keep that and send it to the contact. You're not more likely to get it if you send it to us individually. In fact, if we're gonna be honest, it does not help your chances. It just makes us cranky. We're old. We've been doing this a long time. Leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. We will get back to voicemails next week. What with the technological constraints, we decided to keep it simple this time. With any questions, any stuff you've got going on, we always do like to hear from you because you always lead to some really interesting conversations. So thanks.
I've only been doing this since April, and I'm getting to the point where I'm like Judd Hirsch in the pilot of Studio 60.
I really
also Judd Hirsch in Independence Day.
Yeah.
Works just there.
Judd Hirsch in Independence Day?
Yeah, he's a dad.
Yeah.
I've only seen Independence Day once.
Dad.
Of
like,
course.
Like Gabriel Hartman, I've only seen Independence Day once in 1996. And that was enough.
I bet it's fine.
All right. You can write a review on iTunes or whatever. I don't really care at this point.
Listen,
this one.
I got to pull
it. I just
want
to fucking read. I can't have one.
All right, not
only that, but when you tried to say burrito, you cut out. So
I
just want to.
I'm here with Gordon the intern. He's gonna cry if I don't get a burrito too.
Rent a car. It's worth it.
Do you want to get a burrito?
Did you go to Hodad's?
No, not yet.
You can though at any time, and you know it.
That's true. There's one downtown. I can walk to it.
I know.
I'm Connor.
I can't talk about this again.
I'm Paul.
I can't.
Back to normal next week.
I wish I could get the message over to you now.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.